Did you know in Orlando, the Halloween celebration has already begun? So don't wait. Treat yourself to an Orlando escape. From Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Orlando Resort, to Halloween Spooktacular at SeaWorld, to Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party at Walt Disney World, no one tricks and treats like Orlando, the Halloween vacation capital of the world. For official event schedules, discounted attraction tickets, and hotel deals, click to visitorlando.com.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Source Material Comics Podcast, coming back at you with episode 242. That's right. And Onslaught Month continues. Oh my goodness, it's running wild. Onslaught Month is here on the Rattlitchin Broadcasting Network, and we're heading into Volume 3, X-Men, the Complete Onslaught Epic Volume 3. And of course, the panelists that you got to hear last week are back again. Mark Rattlitch, the Patriarch, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready to start. I'm ready to talk about at least half of this book.
Oh, half of it. All right.
I'm only committing to half.
All right, that's fine.
Evan will cover the other half.
Yeah, then where's that going to leave you, Chris?
Wait, I'll pop in from time to time.
All right, that sounds good. All right, Evan Bevins, welcome back to the Source Material Comics Podcast. Onslaught is here. Do you have your action figures ready?
Oh, yeah, with all the accessories attached.
Very good. Very good. Chris Armstrong, welcome back to the Source Material Comics Podcast. Onslaught Month. We are three quarters, getting ready to be three quarters of the way through here once this podcast is done. Are you ready, sir?
I am ready to celebrate the work of Angel Medina.
Oh, well,
very excited to jump back into his...
Yeah. I just wish this whole crossover could have been just a straight Angel Medina masterpiece. We're going to do the same thing we did last week, ladies and gentlemen. Some quick synopsis at the beginning. We'll run down issue by issue. Well, there's not a whole lot on the docket, so it's not like you're going to be here for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, or anything like that. This is going to be quick in your face, and you're going to get the good idea of what has happened here.
I don't know, man. I've got some beverages and a jar to relieve myself in, so...
Come prepared.
It's supposed to be epic, man.
It is true. It's the epic complete Onslaught crossover.
Complete Onslaught, chill.
That's right. Good point. Very good point. Well, all right. As most of the heroes of New York are dealing with the appearance of Sentinels across the town, the city, the Avengers, Fantastic Four, and the X-Men are trying to deal with a devastating psionic attack from Onslaught that has leveled city blocks and damaged electronics across the Big Apple. During the barrage, Thor is able to free Xavier from the clutches of Onslaught, but Sue and Reed Richards' son remains captive, as Onslaught continues to use him as a source of power. As Cable and Sue attempt another rescue effort, they are joined by the villain Apocalypse. However, the rescue falls short when Apocalypse attempts to kill Franklin. Onslaught also is able to capture the powerful mutant X-Man, using him and Franklin to power his fearful attack. Iron Man is aided by the Black Panther to devise helmets for protection based off of the suit from the Xavier protocols, and the heroes regroup to strategize one more offensive atop 4 Freedom's Plaza. So there you go. Real quick, what happened in... Oh my goodness, I think we had 9 issues, Mark Rattlitch. 10 issues, and the first one being, let's start with X-Men 55.
X-Men number 55, Onslaught Phase 1, Invasion. Story and art by Mark Waid, Andy Kubert, and Dan Panosian. Some of the X-Men and the Avengers catch each other up as they watch the Sentinels stand vigilant in Manhattan, restricting the city of human activity. The FF are growing more concerned for the safety of Franklin Richards, as Onslaught still has him captive. And so the brilliant minds of Iron Man, Reed Richards, and Hank Pym are trying to put together a defense against the powers of both Franklin Richards and Xavier. Biding his time in Central Park, Onslaught has finally decided to take action and releases a massive psionic EMP, shorting out electronics across all the city, causing computers to shut down, armor to fail, and planes to fall, wreaking havoc on our heroes.
You were talking about a good way to start. I think, as we all agreed, in Volume 2, things kind of ended with a little bit of a whimper with some of the tie-ins. This is the one they should have ended Volume 2 with, in my opinion.
I agree.
However, whoever was in charge of the collection did not seek out my counsel 15 years ago or whatever. So, whatever. As far as Gambit, I mean, yeah, this one had a lot more sense of urgency, a lot more stuff happening as it was part of the main story. But the part that I loved where Rogue and Joseph are teaming up to beat up the Sentinel, and, you know, we make quite a pair, Sugar. In the short time I have known you, Rogue, you have impressed me to no end. And then while they're making moon eyes at each other, Gambit saves them from a Sentinel. And so then they all start fighting, and in comes Iceman with the line of the issue. Archie, Betty, Veronica, heads up.
Yeah.
Like, man. I remember Iceman being cool as a kid, like on Spider-Man and his amazing friends. But in when I was reading X-Men, he always seemed like kind of just, oh, hey, guys, I'm Iceman. But that was a good moment.
Was Bobby Drake known for cracking wise throughout the years of being an X-Man?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. It was one of those things where
he and Johnny Storm have the same personality, basically.
Yeah.
Because he's a milksop in the movies.
Not a good representation.
Yeah, but those movies aren't real. I mean, other than Wolverine and maybe Professor X, none of those characters are really that much like their comic book counterparts.
And that's fine. But I think that's the distinction I'm drawing. I think if your only frame of reference is the X-Men movies, then you go to start reading comic books, you're like, wow, the Iceman has like tons of personality because, again, he is a wet mop in that movie.
Yeah.
And this was also when they started making Iceman more powerful. Because, you know, for a while it was just, hey, I can make ice slides and I can shoot people with ice. Before they spun her off in Generation X, Emma Frost possessed him and, like, used his powers all these new and crazy ways. And everybody's like, hey, Bobby, you can actually kick butt.
I mean, was it her personality or her? She was clearly aware of what she was doing.
Yeah, she had been in a coma for a while and she was just kind of lashing out. That was what set her on the road to being a good guy, being in Generation X.
They reference some of this in the road to Onslaught, where they run across each other again, and Bobby, you know, it's like, hello, Emma. It's like, hello, Bobby, you know, and they kind of talk about their relationship, and he, you know, he's very much like keeping her at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after this, the Operation Zero Tolerance, I know we're way off on an Iceman tangent, but Operation Zero Tolerance that they were setting up, you know, going into Onslaught is like my favorite Iceman story. And I remember thinking that they should just kill him off at the end of it because I had never seen Iceman more awesome. And I'm like, I don't want him to go back being, you know, to being like, hey, guys, I'm also an X-Man. So I really thought they were setting it up to kill him off. And I'm like, that's it. Go out on top.
Yeah. Nowhere. But down from there, huh?
Yeah.
Nope. We had to have some more snowballs to the face.
Since you mentioned Gambit, I do want to add this in case, for whatever reason, we forget about it. But when Magneto shows up, good old Joseph, sometimes comics can be so overdramatic. And there's this bit with Magneto helping out and Rogue's trying to get between him and Gambit because Gambit's like, you're the worst thing ever. And she's like, no, he's reformed and, you know, half lobotomized. It's fine. And there's a single panel of Gambit. It's like, and I can't remember the exact words, but it's very melodramatic. He's just like, you do not know the kind of man you once were, Cajon, you know?
I'm looking at the panel right now.
It
at least
took me completely out of the comic. I laughed so hard.
At least one of the panels where Gambit is, of course, in this shadow, the shadow of some building or something. So it's all shadowy and dark. He's like thinking, he's got these thought bubbles coming out. Tender speech shared. I only wanted this. You talking about Charles Magneto himself. Don't sound like your new friend much recollects these sins of his own past. How far you reckon that is? All right. Thank you.
Like, please, I need someone to put this on film and just like everything, just kind of iris back and then spotlight him.
Yes. Yes.
There's a lie you don't know about the man you was, the life you led, before you came who you are now.
It's so good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're going to have some Gambit impressions for the rest of the night. I just feel
ladies and gentlemen, the official Source Material podcast take on Gambit, he is so French.
Cajon. Cigarettes.
No, he's beyond Cajun. He's very French.
Oh, very French. Okay.
As long as we're off in the bayou. Any of you guys ever seen The Incredible Hulk Returns?
Of course.
Forever.
Okay. Love that movie, but there's like one of the the bad guy's henchman, who is like super stereotypical Cajun, and he gets an argument with the boss, and he says, "It don't be fair." And the guy's like, "It don't be fair, you stupid Cajun idiot." And the guy goes, "Hey, you just as Cajun as me, man." And I just love that. Anyway, I'm not sure where else I would ever bring that up in conversation, but there you go.
Just to put an exclamation point on this, and then I promise I won't hold your podcast hostage any longer. I just need somebody to write in a comic book, "All the X-Men, we're going to do this." And then Gambit just stands up and says, "Well, I'm not going to. I'm going to have a sandwich." Because he's very French.
Yeah, sure. As you saw. All right.
Sacre bleu.
That's an Eddie Izzard joke, everybody. Go on, Jesse.
Very good. That's comedian number one he's referenced. Let's keep
track. Mark it down on your bingo card.
Hey, Chris Armstrong. Story by Mark Waid, Andy Kubert on pencils in this first issue. What do you think of the art, man?
One of the best looking issues in the storyline so far, which isn't surprising considering it's Andy Kubert. The first four pages of this issue might be the best four pages like in succession of this. Oh, I mean, I haven't read the fourth volume yet, but I read those when I was younger. But it opens with, you know, some poor sad sack waking up in his New York apartment, makes his way to the window, opens his curtains, and there's a giant sentinel face staring at him.
Yeah.
And then the next page is like a wide shot of New York City with what looks to be like 30 or 40 sentinels crawling all over skyscrapers, walking through the streets, flying overhead. And then the third page, they're smashing the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, dude, they took out the bridge, man. It's like they just boom, fist right through it.
And there's a shot of one of the New York sentinels.
Has, not the George Washington Bridge.
I was gonna say the New York has 21 bridges. If they lose one, it's not a big deal.
There's a shot of one of the sentinels, like, giving the Michael Myers head tilt to the Statue of Liberty.
Yes.
And then the fourth page, which might have been a double page. It was probably a double page spread of select members of the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, the X-Men, looking out over the chaos that they could not prevent. It really sets the tone for the rest of the issue, which is pretty much just an action-packed issue. A little bit of development as far as them trying to find a way to stop Onslaught, but a lot of, you know, sentinel-smashing action in there, too.
When it comes to the art, I just want to point another thing out here real quick. We'll move on to the next issue. But I've noticed as we go through this, remember, this is the mid-90s, 96. So I don't know how much digital effects were used during comic production. I know it's there because if you go to another couple pages where Iceman and the Human Torch are about to get into it, and Sue Storm kind of shows up and puts this like invisible field in between them, but they do some awesome digital blurring with that. And I mean, that's stuff that you don't see that in every comic, you know, in these volumes that we've come through. Only select ones, which may very well be the Kubert ones, because I noticed that we have, every once in a while, they'll have some enhancement, and it'll be by Malibu, which is interesting. I'm looking at that in the credits there. So I wonder if they go in and they, you know, they're using whatever they have available to kind of add some of those digital effects, which they did. I remember when that panel happened, I was like, man, that actually looks really good. Sometimes the digital stuff, you know, they do the background blur and you're just like, okay, that's kind of hackneyed.
Yeah, it can get overdone and it can look cheesy, but I think in this issue in particular, most of that stuff is done really well.
Kubert was awesome. All right, well, okay, next issue. We have Uncanny X-Men 336.
Uncanny X-Men 336, Onslaught Phase 2, A Voice as Deep as Thunder. Story and art by Scott Lobdell, Joe Madureira, Tim Townsend, Dell, V. Russell, and Al Milgram. Franklin Richards attempts to wake the near-catatonic Professor X inside whatever plane of existence Onslaught has him in to no avail. The Avengers and X-Men attempt some damage control and try to recoup. Joseph, the amnesiac, is becoming more aware of the man that he was, the villainous Magneto, while Gambit and Rogue take comfort being back in each other's lives. Susan Richards plans on confronting Onslaught to get back Franklin. But when Onslaught shows that he is torturing Professor X, Cyclops gives the order for Joseph, Storm, Cable, Thor, and Sue Richards to attack. Freeing Xavier, Onslaught feels a sense of freedom as well, somehow growing more powerful, unleashing a devastating psionic attack that levels city blocks.
A Voice as Deep as Thunder, Scott Lobdell, Joe Mad, Tim Townsend. So, Evan, did you have something to talk about with Thor here in Uncanny X-Men 336? Was it this issue?
Yeah, and just that moment with Thor, I mean, you know, obviously it doesn't work out, but I love you also had a good moment with Cyclops. You know, Mark, you were talking a while back about how Cyclops is a lot cooler here than you got to see in the movies, and just that you know, they unload on him and Onslaught's like, are you finished? And Cyclops is like, I don't know, Thor, are we finished? And Thor just rips through him, and it's this awesome punctuation mark, like, haha, Onslaught. And then he's just like, oh no, I actually wanted you to do that. But I mean, just that page where Cyclops is like, I don't know, we finished, you know, big stick in the mud Cyclops. And
yeah,
and then Thor comes through and, you know, just Thors him up really good with his shirtless costume.
Yeah, he does not have. Yeah, he does not have a shirt on here.
Yeah, Thor was weird at that time. I wasn't reading Thor,
I've got questions later, and we may have to go to the wiki because I am absolutely confused on some of this stuff.
Yeah, I just remember because this was at the height of the Overpower card game, and there was like a whole special Onslaught set and this unbeatable deck you could make and all this stuff. I remember, I think the original Thor card they had looked pretty much like traditional Thor. And then they re-released a bunch of them, and you get, it's like, okay, so he doesn't have a shirt or a cape anymore? Too restrictive?
I guess so.
And sometimes they draw the hammer with a chain on it, like Aquaman's wallet.
Yeah. Aquaman's wallet?
One of the first promo images for the Aquaman movie, it was on a cover of Entertainment Weekly, and a friend of mine pointed out friend of yours, Jordan Lowe, pointed out that he has the wallet chain.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And you know, Jordan thought that was ridiculous, and I'm like, dude, you don't want your wallet to float away when you're swimming that fast under the ocean.
It's brilliant. Brilliant.
So anyway, yeah, that was just an awesome Thor moment from a time when I did not think Thor was all that awesome, frankly.
It's always a bonus when you get to see Thor scream, I say thee nay.
Yes.
Someone.
Absolutely.
My kids actually drop that one from time to time. I mean, there are a few prouder moments as a father than when your 8 or 4 year old daughter goes, I say thee nay.
You know, I don't remember him ever saying it in any of the movies, and now I'm kind of disappointed.
Boy, good point.
That alone probably got Love and Thunder greenlit. Like, I don't know, you think we can do another movie? And Waititi is like, I'm going to have him say, I say thee nay.
Boom, done. Here's the money.
He doesn't really talk like that in the movies anyway, I guess, for the most part.
Yeah, they gave up the old English speak after the first movie. Mm-hmm. And then they gave up on Thor's accent altogether in the third one.
Man, Onslaught gets wrecked when Thor flies through him and grabs Xavier. I mean, just right through
You'd
him.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you? But Onslaught disagrees.
Yeah, he's like, freedom. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second.
Behold my mighty hand.
What is going on? And then, of course, you find out it's now that tether between him and Xavier's done. And I guess Onslaught feels like, you know, he's the world is his oyster. So
he's unbridled now.
Yep. I mean, just, yeah, the power. I mean, this thing is unbelievable.
So powerful it knocks down all the heroes, but, you know, doesn't kill anybody.
Yeah, buildings fall, but everything's okay.
I know we can't kill off all the major Marvel heroes, but that was kind of my big disappointment with this whole trade, especially the stuff directly connected to Onslaught, was as powerful as he is, you know, regardless of what he's doing, he doesn't kill anybody.
Hey, didn't you see the ads? He destroys half the Marvel universe.
Good point.
I don't know when that happens, because it hasn't happened yet.
Nobody seems to be dying. People are suffering, though. That's for sure. I mean,
the amount of energy being expended by Onslaught against some, I mean, with the exception of like maybe Phoenix and a handful of others, I don't understand how anyone's living through.
Yeah.
I mean, like the Sentinels, that's fine. Like, and that's the thing. They had to have thrown the Sentinels in there to give like the hero something else to do other than fighting Onslaught, because it seems to me, as powerful as he is, the fight would have been over in 2 seconds. And let me submit this to you, Jesse. You remember that episode of Legion where he's walking through the plane and he's just like, and I think it's also the first episode too where he does this, where he makes a little finger gun motion and all the soldiers turn to like dust.
Oh yeah.
Like presumably Onslaught has that same ability. This shouldn't be taking that long. Mm. Like, well, the epic Onslaught should have been all of 5 minutes. as powerful as they've made him. You know, and I get like, oh well, you have Xavier there kind of holding him back, which is why they, you know, he wanted to ditch Xavier. Like, that's all well and good, but that, I think that's, I would have, I don't know how they would have brought everyone back at the end, but I think this might have been a little bit more impactful had they spent the first two volumes of the story murdering everyone.
I have a theory. My thing is that, you know, all this crap happened with Onslaught. You know, he becomes the psionic being that he is, and then he just, you know, he puts the city on lockdown and he heads to Central Park to do some thinking. Okay, that's my theory, is that his plan was to sit down and think about what his next step was going to be. Obviously, his overall goal, I think, or at least the thing that brought him into being, was that he wanted to at least destroy all of humanity or do something with humanity and let mutant kind rule the earth, because that's what kind of drove him to where he's at now. Was the remember volume one, there was that sad incident where a mutant got beat up by humanity. So he's obviously driven to destroy all of humanity, but he's got to figure out what his next step's going to be. I don't think he's got a beef with all of these mutants. If they would just get and fall in line, he wouldn't have any problem. But instead, while he's sitting there thinking on his thinking chair in Central Park, here comes Cyclops and the rest of the Avengers and all of them knocking on his door. Evan, go ahead.
Well, part of it, Mark touched on that Xavier was kind of keeping him in check, but you know, he's still, for all his power, and he does have some Magneto power in there and some of Professor X's power, but his biggest power, manipulating reality, is still being pulled from Franklin. Absolutely. And Franklin's no lightweight, so that might, I can easily see someone making the argument, well, he can't tap the full lethal potential because Franklin's still pulling some strings and X-Man's in there. Or he could be taking a page out of the Riddler's book, thinking, if I kill him, they won't learn nothing. He's enjoying messing with people, like we'll see in the Hulk issue later. He could have just blinked the Hulk some Avengers out of existence if he wanted to, but he's enjoying messing with them more.
Yeah.
I think where I'm stuck on is when he unleashed that giant burst of force that, like, you know, and I understand it was like an EMP, but still, that's a lot of energy to be expended. And the Avengers are just, you know, take a light dusting.
Well, for all he knew, he might have tried, you know, they may have died. I don't know.
Well, and also, you got to understand, in the 90s, at least in my memory, electromagnetic pulses were like what everybody did. So everybody probably built up an immunity to them. I mean, didn't Magneto do an EMP in Fatal Attractions?
Yes, that's what.
I thought he does one later in the Magneto War. And I don't know, just it seems like EMPs are like the go-to thing in comics. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like, hey, we need something bad to happen. EMP. How's he going to do it? I don't know. He's got powers, right? Yeah.
Well, this, I don't.
It's pointed out on the next page that Susan Richards and Cable are protecting all of them with their superpowers.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Sure, Chris, go to the text instead of wild theories.
I forgot to mention about how Professor X lost his powers. After that happened, after he freed him from Onslaught, Professor X is no longer, according to this, he says, for the moment, maybe forever, my psionic powers no longer work. So that's key, and that's probably very important to remember. All right, Cable. This is the Cable number 35.
Cable number 35, Onslaught Phase 2, It Is Always Darkest. Story and art by Jeff Loeb, Ian Churchill, Scott Hanna, and Art Thiebert. Cable and Sue Richards are trying to avoid Onslaught's psionic storm that they happen to be near the center of when Cable's sworn enemy, Apocalypse, shows up. Barely able to keep his techno-organic virus in check with his telekinesis, Cable instinctively attacks Apocalypse. But Apocalypse has not come to fight Cable, but to figure out a way to defeat Onslaught and rescue Franklin. But he needs Cable's help. As the two travel to the astral plane, they attack Onslaught, and while Cable is distracted, Apocalypse plays his hand, as he was intent on separating Franklin from Onslaught, but not by freeing him, but killing him. Sue Richards shows up and stops Apocalypse, and the team immediately leave before Sue can rescue her child. Seeing this, Franklin's fearful attitude is changing into that of hope.
This is the best part of the whole trade.
Okay, all right.
The misadventures of Sue Storm, Cable, and Apocalypse. Can we get them a show where they hang out at the Regal Beagle and
Apocalypse just tries to kill them every once in a while?
You know, they're living in an apartment.
Apocalypse is the landlord and
knock on a door.
I need a Three's Company reboot with Apocalypse, Sue Storm, and Cable.
It's a fucking great.
This is the best part for me. I really enjoyed this story because, like, it's such an odd, first of all, the odd coupling only rivals the Supreme Intelligence and Rick Jones on a motorcycle. But besides that, I love this idea of, like, Sue Storm's like, I want my baby. And they're like, no, it's fine. Sit out of this one. You're not going to be helpful. And she's like, oh, okay, cool. And then, you know, and then we get there and Apocalypse is like, well, time to kill the child because you're the whole problem here. And if we kill you, that'll solve everything. And then Sue Storm's like, I was hiding the whole time. And Cable's like, I was hiding her the whole time. and there's Apocalypse, who is just doing every, like, moment when you're at work and you're just surrounded by idiots. And you're just like, you're all imbeciles. Well, talk about missing the point. You know, it's like, you don't actually want Apocalypse to kill the kid. But in that, just for a brief moment, trying to serve the greater good, I saw where Apocalypse was coming from. And I was like, yeah, that's, and the whole thing was just, it was a fun story. But the whole, like, setup to that, to me, was just hysterical. It was like, no. There's a great big threat here. It's good. We're all going to die. I don't want, you know, I'm all about the strong surviving, not the strong dying, you know, in heroic battles. Sue Storm's like, well, you're not going to kill my kid. And he's like, forest for the trees, man.
There may be some stuff, and you may already understand this. I don't know how much history you know between Cable and Apocalypse, but these two, it's obviously stated in this comic that they're mortal enemies. Cable was taken into the future and bred practically to try and topple the reign of Apocalypse, and to see them work together, I don't know if it's ever been done in any other comic. I definitely don't think up to this point. I mean, when you saw Cable and Apocalypse in the same comic book, you knew shit was going to go down. There was going to be a fight.
I think they'd ever actually come face to face before this, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
It was supposed to be this, you know, big fight of destiny, and it's like, okay, we got bigger fish to fry.
And that is just supporting the argument of how powerful Onslaught is, that these two mortal enemies, these two people actually have to come together and make a decision to set their differences aside. Yeah, I'm bred to kill you. Yeah, you're the, you know, I'm obviously going to kill you as well. You know, these two have to set those differences aside and work together to try and beat Onslaught. So I thought that was interesting. Like I said, Churchill art is just phenomenal. Again, I'd like to know how long he was on this series, because I think I own them all. Cable's techno-organic virus, out of control, man.
Mm-hmm.
Out of control.
Yeah, that first double page spread with Sue and Cable, and Cable's arm is just like, it's almost as you're fantasticed out. It's stretched out over like several feet, and it's just jagged metal. He can barely form it into, you know, fingers. It's just really gnarly looking, and the spikes coming off of his face. Maybe those are his eyebrows. I don't know.
Was it just me, or was he looking a little strifey in some of those?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely. Strife was his evil clone there, Mark. Just right? Am I right there, Evan?
Yeah, something like that.
More or less.
So,
I pointed out in, I think, the first episode we did that I really liked Joe Mad's Apocalypse. And Ian Churchill has, like, a completely different art style and a completely different interpretation of Apocalypse. And I think his is awesome as well. He's just, like, this giant, dense statue. And I really, like, he's super imposing, and he's just...
He's a badass villain.
I'm having trouble forming my thoughts.
Let me jump in here real quick and say my other real favorite part of this is, depending on who's drawing her and what comic, her hairstyle keeps changing.
Oh.
It's the best.
Cable?
No, Sue Storm. Is this a thing that happens with Sue Storm in Marvel Comics? Because I was thinking about the most recent Age of Ultron, where it's like Sue Storm and Wolverine team up. You know, it's kind of like a weird, these people barely have anything to do with each other, odd couple kind of a thing. And of all the gals and of all the boys that you could throw together in a comic book, it seems like for the gals, at least, they like to throw Sue Storm in there. And I don't know if it's just I'm citing the only two situations where that happened, or am I on to something?
I think it's kind of like they're trying to balance the scales with how she was portrayed when she was first introduced. Way back,
as a mousy woman who needed to make sandwiches in the kitchen?
Way back in Fantastic Four number 12, when the first time the Hulk and the Thing fought, Thunderbolt Ross brings in the Fantastic Four. So this was like early 60s. They start talking about, well, Mr. Fantastic can do this to the Hulk, and the Thing can do this, and the Torch can do that. And Sue Storm, the Invisible Girl at that time, goes, gosh, I just don't know what I can do. And and Thunderbolt Ross says, nonsense. Having a pretty girl around always keeps the men's spirit up. And Mr. Fantastic goes, that's just what we think of Sue, General. So a lot of times she's been like, you know, almost an afterthought. And then people keep coming back to the fact that, hey, she's probably the most powerful member of the Fantastic Four. She's not the one that's always out there in front, but you know, she's the one that when push comes to shove, you know, she can throw down with the best of them, and is probably the most dangerous person on there. So I can't necessarily think of any more odd couple pairings like that with her, but a lot of times they do these stories and they remind you, hey, you know, the Thing's strong, the Torch can go all Nova, Mr. Fantastic can invent anything, but Sue's the one you have to worry about.
Yeah, as dainty as she is, as pretty as she is, trust me, you don't want to mess with her. And her kid is, you know, hostage by this being. You're invested in her getting her kid back. You know, you don't want to see her, you don't want to see Franklin get hurt, and that's obviously going to break her heart, and it's pretty, but she's a badass. She really is a badass. All right, well, let's go ahead. We'll talk about X-Force 58.
X-Force number 58, Onslaught Impact 2, Before the Dawn. Story and art by Jeff Loeb, Castrillo, and La Rosa. Still unconscious from the attack by Mr. Sinister, Meltdown, Sunspot, Caliban, Warpath, Shatterstar, and Domino appear to be on Death's Door. An astral guide appears and rallies them together and attempts to put them on the path to walk into the light, leaving their lives behind. The team soon realize that the guide is actually Onslaught, attempting to take them off of the battlefield, and are able to actually wake themselves up. Another astral figure appears, this being the goodness of Charles Xavier, and he inspires them that they are a strong team that can face any challenge, including that of Onslaught.
The only thing I have here is Caliban's dream of being Superman, which I thought was pretty cool, where he was actually like very much in the role of Clark Kent. Caliban, I think at some point, was like lifting the iconic car. I didn't have much else to add to this. This was kind of one of those, I wouldn't say throwaway, because we're obviously worried about the team and what happened, but I don't even know if they're going to show up again.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I wanted to like the issue, but it just, it felt so forced. And I mean, I don't know what Charlie/Onslaught, like I had in my notes, oh, okay, that must be Onslaught. Oh, no, wait, he's trying to help them. No, wait, maybe he's not. I guess he's trying to kill them. Oh, wait, no, I have no idea. The things that stood out for me was, I mentioned last time when I was talking about the Generation X issues that didn't count or whatever, that they mentioned that there was psychic interference messing with Emma's powers, and then Cable actually references it. So I was like, okay, that did show up somewhere else. And then I wondered why Polaris was on the cover.
Ooh, yeah.
It seemed a little random.
Yeah. Oh, random. What do you think of that? Random. Nobody gets it. I get it. I get it, Evan. I get it. Chris Armstrong's over there just going, I don't even want to acknowledge it.
I'm still trying to think of a way to describe Ian Churchill's apocalypse. My bad, guys.
It is probably the best apocalypse I've ever seen.
Shatterstar, by the way, his dream is to be hanging out, chilling out by a tree, not the warrior that they all thought he would be.
Yeah, this X-Force issue, I was bored to tears, to be honest. Like, by the time they got to the second character, I was like, oh, I see, we're going to do this with every character.
Yep.
Let's just move it along, guys.
Agreed.
I'm sure if I was a regular X-Force reader at the time, it might have had some impact, but
I was a regular X-Force reader at the time, and I don't really remember.
All right. Well, X-Man number 19, Shades of Grey.
X-Man number 19. Onslaught Phase 2, Shades of Grey. Story and art by Terry Cavanaugh, Steve Skros, and Bud LaRosa. Nate Gray, X-Man, awakes in the lair of Mr. Sinister. After a show of power by Mr. Sinister, Nate calls his bluff, exposing that no matter what his plans are to try and use him as a weapon, Sinister cannot control him. During the conversation, Nate begins to hear the faint cry of Franklin Richards, and even though Sinister pleads with him to ignore the call, Nate reaches out with his powers, only to find Onslaught at the other end. Grabbing Nate and escaping through a rip in reality, now one of the most powerful mutants is a prisoner of one of the worst evils the Marvel Universe has ever seen.
The only notes that I had here was just we got more Nate Gray and Sinister, which we kind of talked about on our last podcast. Anybody else have anything they want to add to this one?
My notes were as follows.
Okay.
Gambit reference. Is Threnody cosplaying Aquaman? And is that the Abomination? I guess we have to wait till next issue. The big dude that shows up and saves Threnody at the end. Pretty sure the Abomination was living in the sewers at that point.
Oh, okay. And I'm just throwing that out there, but does Scalp Hunter and Arclight like go off and have sex and then come back?
I just assumed they talked about their feelings and reflected on their mortality and since they're clones, whether they are the real them. But I mean, yeah, they might have been doing the deed.
Okay, just putting that out there. I mean, while before Threnody's chained up, they're just like, hey, let's take off for a second. We know we got this as a, you know, she's our prisoner, but as they say.
At least they left. I thought at first they weren't even going to go out of the...
Get a room!
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's pretty thoughtful of them.
Get a room.
So are we certain that it's pronounced Threnody and not Trinity?
Everybody hold hands as we cross the pronunciation bridge.
There's a H, isn't there?
Yeah, and I was pronouncing it Threnody at first, and then I was like, maybe that's just a weird spelling of Trinity.
If that's a silent H, I mean... Well,
I'm basing my pronunciation on how I read it when I was like 13 years old. And
same here.
I'm sure I did the same.
You were the first person to challenge me on it, so I have to kind of reconsider everything I've believed all these years.
Is it okay? So Threnody is actually a word, and it is a noun that means a lament. And let me hit the play button. It is Threnody, according to Google. So we're going to roll with it. What do you think of that? We have answers right here on the Source Material Comics podcast.
At long last.
Mark, anything to add?
Once we got out of like the stuff that was directly dealing with Onslaught, I'm not going to lie, this trade kind of lost me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Were you concerned that Onslaught now has X-Man?
I mean, it's so funny to see like an actual guy is a MacGuffin. So that's Onslaught, right? He's just collecting powerful psionic mutants for one reason or another so that he can be the ultimate, you know, he can be the ultimate psionic power. That's what this whole story is, essentially.
I mean, he's grabbing these people so he can, he's obviously going to do something with the power that he's getting. We just don't know what.
Reshape reality in his image.
Okay.
Okay, but I'm saying like, so essentially like Franklin Richards and Xavier and X-Man are all like human batteries for his evil designs. So that's like the whole story. So, I mean, so it needed to happen, you know. You needed to put the damsel in distress so the heroes can save her. In this case, the damsel is X-Man.
X-Man, yeah.
Well, this kind of goes to, like, the strengths and weaknesses of, like, these big intercompany crossovers. Like, because they want to involve all these different characters, and they want, like, almost every storyline to tie into it, especially back then when they weren't doing those on a Civil War Spider-Man, you know, three-issue miniseries or whatever. So, I mean, there's just so much filler. And reading these in trade, so it could easily be a two-volume collection instead of a four-volume collection.
Really?
If you just use the essentials. And I would say this is one of the essentials, like the X-Men story.
Not saying
you should have enjoyed it, but...
It's labeled as Phase, not Impact. Well, are the main storyline ones, and Impact are the second. I mean, I think if they ever, you know, re-release these, they ought to do like a Phase, which you could probably do in one volume, maybe two, and then Impact as a couple volumes. Because one of the structural issues with this is this wasn't written as like a, you know, part one of 40. These weren't necessarily written in order. So, you know, sometimes, you know, as you decide where to place stuff, you have lulls or you have some inconsistencies. Like, you know, in a lot of these, after Onslaught gets his skull face, he still looks like old school Onslaught in most of the issues, which I didn't bother me because I think he looks cooler with the pseudo Magneto helmet than with the Silver Skull face.
Agreed.
So, but yeah, I mean, yeah, and with all these issues, even though they go to some pretty ridiculous lengths to get people to buy issues, I mean, I think it would have been really counterproductive to make this where you had to read every single issue.
So, yeah, it was more like this event is happening to everyone in the Marvel Universe and for these 3 months. So
yeah,
it has an impact on every title.
Waka waka. For me personally, though, the stuff that dealt with the story directly had more of a impact on me. I find the Onslaught story compelling. I don't necessarily find a lot of the side quest stuff compelling.
Yeah, Mark's not a fan of the Joe Schmo. We covered that there last time. I agree. I hear you, Mark. Trust me. Because that's mostly where we are. Some of our complaints are coming in. It's just like, okay, did we really need that? No, not really. But we need to show how it was, how that really mattered to some.
But that's the thing, is you don't need an entire issue of Thor or an entire issue of the Hulk or an entire issue of Spider-Man to do any of those things. You know, a panel here in the, like, I understand the idea is to sell books. I don't need to be sold on, you know, we're doing these so that we can get people to buy all the books instead of none. That's why my dad gave up reading comics, by the way. He's like, you're not going to get this little black duck. But I just from a story point of view, if you're going to say, here's your main quest, it has to do with Onslaught, and then, but here's going to be all these, like, side quests and B plots, you then have to do the work to make them compelling. Some of the B-plot stuff was compelling. I like the stuff with X-Men. Some of it, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there were definitely some that didn't. I mean, you're just like, okay, well, that was an issue that happened. But, like, take the Hulk one. I think that was a good self-contained story that gave you a look at the Hulk.
Yeah, let's segue into that one real quick there.
Incredible Hulk, number 445. Onslaught Impact 2, Dancing in the Dark. Story and art by Peter David, Angel Medina, Robin Riggs. Hulk meets up with the Avengers to try and come up with a plan to attack Onslaught, and they believe they have a winning strategy to tunnel under Onslaught's citadel and attempt to surprise him by coming out from under him. Nearing the citadel, Onslaught attacks the team of Hulk, Falcon, Hawkeye, Vision, and Crystal. As the team advances, Hulk is the only one that survives a barrage of attacks until he finally meets up with Onslaught and physically destroys him. Hulk cherishes the fact that it was he and he alone that killed Onslaught, even though others on his team were jealous or afraid of him. This is brought to light by Onslaught, who reveals that their attack played out in their heads, exposing Hulk's true feelings to the rest of the team, losing their valuable trust. This leads Hulk to making a decision not to assault head-on.
What'd you think of that issue of the Hulk there, Mark? I mean, Angel Medina on art, aside from that.
It's one of the few side quests that I actually did find compelling. But here's the reason why. There's a very specific reason why it works. It deals directly with Onslaught's power. It also makes the Hulk vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hulk is the strongest one there is, blah, blah, yakety, schmackety. He's undone by a guy who can manipulate him mentally, which is, you know, not even as the professor, four-dimensional thinking, not the Hulk's.
Strong suit.
The point of that issue was that all the brute force in the world, all of this vast strength that all of these heroes have, doesn't matter a hill of beans to a being like this. That's what makes him truly, you know, not to segue into something completely different, but bear with me for a moment. You know, I just watched It Chapter 2, which is 3 hours of something gross going boogie, woogie, woogie and running at you on screen. Blah, 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 blah. You know, it's 3 hours of that. Think Hobbs and Shaw, but a zombie going blah, 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 instead of Jason Statham and The Rock punching stuff. It's that kind of structure.
Okay.
And that's not scary. That's gross. That can be, you know, as far as like jump scares or, you know, just being like catching you off guard, that kind of fear, which isn't a lasting fear. If I walk up to Jesse when he's not paying, like in the middle of editing, he's got his cans on, he's working on his source material, and I just walk up to him and slap him on the back, he's gonna jump. And after he punches me in the nuts, he's going to forget all about it. However, if you do something unsettling, if you rock the foundation of somebody's beliefs, if you shatter them at their core, that's true horror. Mm-hmm. And that's where the story is successful, especially the Hulk bit. You know, it shakes him at his core. He doesn't, like, really believe in himself after it's all over. There's a lot going on there, and that's what makes Onslaught a really classic villain. Giant bursts of energy in the Avengers and X-Men flying through the air and dusting themselves off, going, oh, that sucked. I'm like, ugh, I've seen this before. But when Onslaught really gets at people and makes, you know, and really, again, I'll do another movie reference. Far From Home, the Mysterio sequence where Spider-Man doesn't know what's real. And that, to me, is true horror. It's the, you don't know what's real. You're questioning everything. You're questioning yourself. You're being taken down a peg. It's not the punchy parts. You know, Jed, she knows what I'm talking about because we talk about this now after having reviewed Doom Patrol. It's something else besides the punchy.
Yeah.
And that's what I really liked about this. And that's the best, parts about Onslaught so far, for me at least.
And somebody step in here and kind of give me an idea, but the Hulk's mindset going into this, it seems like, and obviously that's the big crux of what happens, is Onslaught kind of exposes him for the true feelings that he has for his teammates and himself, which I didn't understand what was going on here. I understood that it seemed like the Hulk had some dark stuff that he was dealing with. A lot of mistrust, a lot of stuff that was, you know, kind of gnawing at him, and the teams, you know, I could tell that some of the teammates, especially Hawkeye, may not have trusted going into battle with the Hulk.
I think a lot of it goes to what the Hulk's always had a problem with, is, you know, people fearing him and looking at him as just a monster, whether he's deserved it or not. I mean, like, if you look at the beginning, he saves the people in the subway car, not out of any heroic motivation, but because he's ticked off that Onslaught took over his mind. So if Onslaught wants to hurt these people, I'm going to help him just to stick it to Onslaught.
Okay.
And so then he gets back, and, you know, there's that line, as I pass by, conversation dies, they still see me as an enemy, not a true ally. And then Falcon sticks up for him because he helped out his nephew. And so he tells Hawkeye that, and Hawkeye's like, okay, you know what? You're right. And so then Vision and Crystal, that they come with him, and it's like, okay, here's these Avengers that Hulk turned his back on in Avengers number 2, yeah. Back when there was only one Avengers number 2, because they didn't trust him. And now he's got, I mean, granted, Vision's broken, so without Crystal, it might as well be the Hulk going there himself to fight Onslaught. No disrespect to Falcon and Hawkeye. Yeah. But he's got these people who are like, yep, okay, we believe in what the Hulk's going to do. And then Onslaught baits him into this, going, haha, screw you, because he's got, you know, the Gray Hulk's attitude, Banner's intelligence, Green Hulk's strength, but the Gray Hulk's attitude, and he's just like, ha, I did it. And then they see, oh yeah, he's kind of what we thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a monster because he's savage and out of control. He's a monster because he could care less about them, and he's looking out for himself, and he doesn't care if they survive as long as he wins.
The weakness right now exposed for the Incredible Hulk is the 4 inches between his ears. It's just that, you know, you attack the brain, you trick the brain, and he's like, you know, he's smart enough to kind of talk himself out of it. So anyway, yeah, I agree. This was a decent issue. I like this one. Chris, did you have anything you wanted to add to that, or are you still stuck on Apocalypse?
Angel Medina. When we talked about his art in the last issue, I recognized his art style, and I knew I had read something else that he'd done. Obviously, I had read these issues when I was younger. I had these as part of the Onslaught crossover. But there was something else, and I couldn't place it, and I finally did a few days later. He penciled Avengers Ultra Force.
Oh, really?
And crossover that Ultraverse Marvel did. I mean, Marvel owned it by then, but regardless. And they did two one-shots. They did Avengers Ultraforce and Ultraforce Avengers. And when I was younger, I had Avengers Ultraforce by Angel Medina. And for over a decade, I did not have the other crossover that was penciled by George Perez.
Oh.
And I mean, what a gap between
Wow. Two. No kidding. Jeez.
That's why I hate Angel Medina. But hey, you know, that image of him blowing Hawkeye's face off of his skull was pretty damn cool. So all is forgiven, Angel Medina.
We forgive you. I mean, the dude
I haven't slept. Okay.
The dude draws muscles upon muscles, and his faces are just blocky. But yeah, I guess, and I mean, I don't know if he could draw a pretty girl, because every girl is very, unfortunately, doesn't look so great. Just does not look so great.
Do a Google image search for Angel Medina. He's got better stuff than that.
What is this deal? Did it take him a while to wake up?
I don't know. Some people really change their styles around. I thought this one was better than 444 than the last.
You know what? I will agree with you there. That was one of my notes. Is I actually could tolerate this one a little bit more than I did the Cable issue where he and Cable teamed or fought.
I'd seen a lot of stuff and I couldn't think of it by Angel Medina. I remember liking it better than this. So yeah, I just did a Google image search and I'm like, okay, he's got some cool stuff.
It looks like he had a phase where he was doing some McFarlane-esque stuff.
Sam and Twitch. Says
that explains the McFarlane-esque.
Yes.
Drawing everything with by McFarlane, you mean drawing everything with triangles?
You, sir. All right, we got to move on here. Let's get out of.
I spoke heresy.
Let's get into Avengers 402. No, I'm sorry, Iron Man 332. Don't want to skip Iron Man.
Iron Man number 332, Onslaught Impact 2, Night Never Ending. Story and art by Terry Cavanaugh, Joe Bennett, Tim DeZahn, and Mark McKenna. Iron Man, Quicksilver, and Giant Man are trying to determine the best way to rid the city of the gigantic Sentinels, and are joined by Black Panther. While Giant Man battles a Sentinel himself, it buys time for Iron Man and Black Panther to make it to a secret Wakandan base underground. Iron Man and Black Panther are able to use a cache of vibranium and the plans for the Psi armor to create some Psi-shielded helmets for the team in the upcoming fight with Onslaught. As Giant Man destroys the Sentinel, he is weakened and now has the attention of many Sentinels in the area. Luckily, Quicksilver is there to rescue him. Now the repeated goal of the Sentinels is to destroy all Avengers, and they say this many times as they break into the Wakandan bunker. As the team fight the Sentinels, Iron Man is able to take them down, and now they are going to meet up with the rest of the team at Times Square for a possible final confrontation.
I just want to say that there are a lot of Sentinels in New York, and they do a really good job of making it seem like one Sentinel is a pain in the ass. Giant Man, I think, fights just one. Gets beat down and is almost squished if it wasn't for Quicksilver. And the other thing is that, I mean, it takes a lot to try and take one of these things down. So I will give props to editorial or whoever's making this decision. Like, hey, look, the Sentinels have to be a threat. It isn't like somebody could just go up there and Captain Marvel these things out by flying through them.
Laser lady.
these things are powerful, and our heroes are having a tough time with them. So,
but in all fairness, Carol Danvers, I don't think, had her powers at this point. So,
Evan, did you have anything else you wanted to add on that one?
I thought this one was, you know, not as strong as the Hulk, but I mean, it advanced the story somewhat. Yeah. I remember saying last time, did they even use the stuff from the Xavier Protocols? Well, they do, and they built this, and then it gave you, I mean, like I've said before, at this point, Marvel was the X-Men's world, and the Avengers were just living in it. And so it's this huge X-Men event that, by the way, they're ending all these long-running Marvel comics, so they had to try to get a little nod to Iron Man, even though it's not the real Iron Man, in there. And I thought this one did an okay job. I mean, it's not on the level of that Hulk issue, but it said a little, very little, about Iron Man and contributed to the overall story, as opposed to just, hey, Iron Man's in New York, there are Sentinels in New York, Onslaught's happening.
Got Black Panther in there, too, which was a character that I knew nothing about in the 90s. I had no idea, you know, anything about the Black Panther. So
everything, you know, I learned about Black Panther, I got from Christopher Priest's Marvel Knights series. But I got some elements of that, of how imposing he can really be. When I was younger, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's the Avenger who's that king from Africa. And that's all I really knew.
That's it. Chris, anything to add?
It's serviceable. Okay. But I will say little misinformation earlier.
Oh,
I scanned through some of the pages. It's hard to make it out. But in the very last panel of the issue, we get a nice shot of an iron nipple. He does have nipples on the suit.
So he made the Psi shields and attached nipples to his suit.
All right, let's go. We're going into Avengers 402, end of the line.
Avengers number 402, Onslaught Impact 2, end of the line. Story and art by Mark Waid, Mike Diodato, Tom Palmer, and John Kalis. The Avengers, Wasp, Thor, Scarlet Witch, and Captain America rescue a group of people on the subway, and upon reaching the surface, they are astounded by the chaos in the city, as fear has gripped New York since Onslaught and the Sentinels appeared. Finding their way to Times Square, they meet with Iron Man, Giant Man, and Quicksilver, and are given the psi-shielded helmets, but are soon attacked by Holocaust and Post, two disciples of Onslaught. As the citizens watch in horror, Captain America realizes the Avengers cannot beat the villains, and at first appears to be retreating. However, he finds a way for the two villains to beat themselves, instilling hope among the residents of New York. With their new psi-shielded defenses, the team must focus their attention on the main threat at hand, Onslaught.
Mark, did you like this one? Captain America had a chance to kind of shine as the hero and get the people under control. What do you think?
Yeah, it was pretty good issue.
Okay. All right.
High praise.
Two things I noticed about this. I mean, it was nice, you know, showing the Avengers, you know, the big bad cosmic level threat Avengers helping out some people. Although it took four Avengers to save a subway car and only one Hulk.
True.
And then while I did like the way that it all turned out with Captain America taking him down when everybody's on the ropes. And I know they were trying to sell that Cap was just, you know, they were trying to faint you into thinking that Cap was getting overwhelmed. But like there's a line where Cap gets up to the surface and he says, like, so much chaos and destruction. I've never seen anything like it. And I'm like, weren't you at D-Day? I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, they're trying to tell you how bad it is. Oh. And it is bad, but it's, I don't know. It's kind of this sliding scale of disaster in comics. You know, like there's things where all of existence is threatened, and this is, you know, the city's getting messed up.
If this were really happening, thousands would be dead, if not tens of thousands.
Yeah.
In this comic, they're not going to say that that's what's happening. But
right.
Captain America.
Nowadays, they would. They'd be like,
yeah,
just,
yeah, of course, yes,
scattering body parts everywhere. you're right. I guess what I'm getting at is they're telling you how bad it is, but they don't do a very good job of showing you how bad it is. Sure. And I'm not saying, I mean, it doesn't need to be a high body count, I guess, but I think they could have done a better job conveying it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have made more sense if another character maybe had said that, but they were also trying to hammer home that the illusion that Cap was faltering and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, tough juggling act. Maybe they didn't stick to landing quite that, the way they could have.
Yeah. But the overall idea, I like the issue.
Okay.
Overall.
Yeah, I'm right there behind you. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Cap having his moment to kind of shine and inspire not only his teammates, but the people around him as well. And I remember that one panel where it's like, and the crowd goes wild. And I was like, yes, that was pretty cool. All right, tell me.
That's a good sign off for the Avengers, even though, like I said, it's an X-Men event. You know, they did like, okay, here's something the Avengers can do. It's not essential to the story, but, you know, it makes the end of the Avengers for the moment a little more than a subplot in an X-Men story.
Yeah. And of course, Onslaught's got to be there at the end to kind of goad them and kind of give them, all right, here we go. Avengers assemble. They're heading. They're going to take them out. Here we go. Somebody needs to tell me about Red Norval, because we're heading into Thor 502.
Thor number 502. Putting on the Bear Shirt. Story and art by Bill Messner-Lobes, Mike Diodato, and Diodato Studios. Before the great battle that lies ahead, Thor reminisces about his past with Red Norval. How he once believed himself to be Donald Blake, a trick of his father Odin. How Odin fell to Earth and became crazy. His young misadventures with his brother Loki, and his failed relationship with Jane Foster. Jane Foster actually appears and comes to talk to Thor, and as they get a sense of closure, they are shortly interrupted by an injured man and his daughter. Soon after, Hel rises out of the lake, communicating to Thor that he is going to go into oblivion tomorrow, but has a place by her side right now if he likes. Thor declines, and instead eats one last time with Red Norval, preparing for the next day.
And I don't know what the hell I'm getting into here. Where Thor has a half shirt on, shoulder pads.
Thank God he got that costume back.
Chain wallet rock on that freaking, on that hammer there, Mjolnir. Okay.
He should have put a chain on it a long time ago. I mean, you know, there was that time where if he didn't have it for 60 seconds, he turned back into a human. So that's really an idea whose time had come.
No kidding. So really, all this is a walk down memory lane where he talks with Red Red Norville, which apparently Red Norville, his actual name is Roger Norville or Norvell. Maybe I'm calling him Norville. It's probably
that's what I called him.
Okay. Well,
you sure it's not Orville Redenbacher?
It may very well be.
They call him Red because he has red hair.
Whoa. Mind blown.
Maybe.
This dude, tell me, Evan, what did you say was going on with this guy? How did he be? He's like a Thor analog, or what happened?
Okay, there was a storyline a while back. Something in the wiki was not particularly well written, but there was something involving some schemes of Loki and a documentary crew, and Red was their cameraman. And somehow he wound up with Thor's belt and Thor's gloves. There was some whole thing where Odin had like a backup plan in case Thor ever died. He had dispersed his power. And so Red got through that and walked through some Thor fire. That gave him the ability to wield Mjolnir. And he was hitting on Sif. You know, he realized, okay, Thor's a better Thor than I am. I think he died nobly. And then Thor was off hanging out with the humans. And Odin was like, I need me another Thor. Hey, that Red Norville guy, he's okay. And then as often happens with that, Thor and Red became friends.
Okay.
I mean, I had heard of him. This was the first comic I'd seen him in, and this is not one I read originally. So, but I mean, you know, he's no Beta Ray Bill or Thunderstrike or Frog Thor.
I just want to say marvel.fandom.com. okay, you head on down to the powers and abilities of old Red here. Superhuman strength. Like Thor, he is supernaturally strong. He possesses vast superhuman strength, enabling him to lift well in excess of 100 tons. So they have a little like power grid over here, and it is actually listed as power grid. Here we go. Speed 7, strength 7, intelligence 2. Sorry, Red.
I mean, that's like average intelligence, I'm pretty sure.
No, okay. All right. Well, I won't argue. So I guess we'll say like 1 is base human intelligence, like the basic Florida man, and then 2 is like just above that. How's that? We'll do it that way. Okay. Yeah. Don't have much else to say about that one. Then we get putting on the bear shirt. That was right. I forgot about the great title we had there, putting on the bear shirt.
Which I had just read, listened to like an almost random Cosmic Treadmill.
Yeah.
And they actually explained what that meant. And I'm like, I've seen that somewhere. And then I read this and I'm like, hey, thanks, Chris and Reggie. Now I understand.
Way to go, Chris and Reggie. So Thor knows he's going to die, at least according to another god friend of his by the name of Hel. But anyway, Hel comes out and says, pretty much tells him, you are going to die tomorrow. But if you want to right now, you can come with me, reside over Hel. So he decides not to do that. Takes the noble approach and says, no, thank you. I'd rather die in battle, pretty much. Then hangs out with Red and eats some park meat, or whatever he's eating there at the old campfire. Here is another kind of...
Well, it's souvlaki.
Souvlaki. I have no idea what that is.
It's from Dimitri's.
Okay. All right. So
I'm taking a page out of Chris Armstrong's book and referencing the text.
Are you referencing? Okay. All right. This was another one of the instances where they kind of gave us a heads up that some big stuff's going to go down. I alluded to it, I believe, it was in the first volume where the thing saw his horoscope and it said, you're about to go on a big journey. He was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. And now we have Hel actually coming up and telling Thor, hey, you're going to die tomorrow. So again, the stakes are there. They're high. There's going to be some stuff that goes down when this battle actually happens. So, all right, let's get into Wolverine 105, Faces in the Fire.
Wolverine number 105, Onslaught Impact 2, Faces in the Fire. Story and art by Larry Hama, Valsa Meeks, Chad Hunt, V. Russell, and H. Candelario. Portions of New York are burning, leaving a lot of its residents in danger, trapped in buildings that are being incinerated. On the scene, aiding first responders, is the near-feral Wolverine. When a mother cries out that her young child is stuck in a multi-floor apartment building, Wolverine attempts to rescue them. Directed out of the building by a stick-wielding blind man, Wolverine plans to go back in and save them, as the man remained behind. Once back in the building, Wolverine finds out the man is Elektra's long, thought-dead teacher, Stick, and he ain't too keen on being rescued. During their encounter, Stick makes Wolverine understand that he needs to stop relying on others to lead him down the path to recovering from his feral ways, and that it is Wolverine himself that must make the journey alone. Escaping the building, Wolverine runs into the Human Torch, who says everyone is gathering for another coordinated offensive against Onslaught at Four Freedoms Plaza.
Evan, you said you liked this one. This was, you know, basically Wolverine trying to help out some first responders.
It's neat when you do a story that doesn't involve Wolverine stabbing everyone. And I mean, and you know, part of what's going on with Wolverine here is he's devolving into an animal, and yet here he is, you know, even before Scott Glenn appears out of the flames and it, you know, explains to him that he can choose to be a man, he's already doing that. There's nothing to stab there, but there's Wolverine going in, saving a kid, inspiring a young Andrew Garfield to perform one of the coolest scenes in The Amazing Spider-Man years later.
Yeah.
You be the hero. You wear the mask. I mean, yeah, we know Wolverine's a violent character, but what I always find the most interesting about Wolverine is when he tries to rise above that. Peter David was writing Wolverine First Class years ago, which was an all-ages Wolverine book, and people were like, how can you write an all-ages Wolverine book? He can't stab everybody. Mm-hmm. And Peter David says, if I can't write a good story where Wolverine doesn't stab someone, I'm not a very good writer, am I? And so that's what I've always found most interesting about Wolverine is not that he will kill everybody in the room no matter what, but that even though sometimes he can't see a better way, he wants there to be a better way. Mm-hmm. And so here's Wolverine, you know, recognizing that, okay, I can't stab my way out of this problem. And instead of, you know, going and building himself another treehouse, he's like, well, what can I do to help? I can catch on fire so little kids don't have to.
This issue is, again, it's the result of some crap that Onslaught caused, and our heroes have to kind of deal with it. It's not dealing directly with Onslaught, but we're also using that to kind of further the character and the character development for Wolverine, where Wolverine, like we've said, he's turning feral, but he's trying to work his way back. That's what we found out in that last Wolverine issue that we covered. He's got to find this pathway in order to try and get back to the human that he once was, or at least, you know, reverse this metamorphosis that's going on him. And that's kind of where Stick comes in and says, look, we can point you to the path. We can give you a sign that says, here it is, but you are the one that has to walk it. It's character development for Wolverine. This is stuff that's going to probably last a lot longer in his book, but it's using the events of Onslaught to kind of bring those to the forefront. And then at the end, of course, you know, Human Torch shows up and says, hey, it's your ride, buddy. We're heading over to Four Freedoms Plaza. We need you. And that's kind of where it ends. So, Chris, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
The only less relevant issue we've covered so far is the Sensational Spider-Man issue where the Sentinel showed up on the last page.
Yep.
Because basically the last panel is the only thing that's relevant. Not a bad comic, though.
Yeah, I don't think at any point we're going to be going, you know, crap, Feral Wolverine, he didn't make that extra step, and now he screwed up the whole plan with Onslaught. Here we go. None of that's going to happen, I don't believe. Yeah, you're right. It is not relevant to the overall story in any way. Mark, you ready to end this thing? You got any, you want to start us off with your final thoughts?
I'm anxious to see how this ends. I did not read ahead. You're lucky I read this book.
I cannot wait for you to get into the next book. Cannot wait.
The musical number is astounding.
Yes, sir.
I hope so. Boy, Evan, now you've got me thinking about Onslaught the Musical. No, I'm anxious to see how it ends. I think this has been a very uneven story for me, where I think, like I said, the main thread is very strong, but a lot of the tangential threads are not so strong. The greater purpose of trying to serve the master of selling as many books as possible takes away from the strength of the story. But then again, it isn't my company that had to do a fire sale of their IP in order to keep the lights on. So I get it. Incidentally, I was talking to a coworker today. He was like, did you see Dark Phoenix? And I'm like, yeah. He was like, I really thought it was good. But when did that become a Marvel thing? I didn't know the X-Men were Marvel. And I'm like, just get the fucking inmate, you idiot. I work in a jail, in case anyone was wondering. But this particular volume, better than the second, not as good as the first volume so far. We'll see where the fourth one lands.
Hey, Mark, Marvel's bankruptcy. Would you like to know when that occurred, when they filed for it?
When?
December 27th, 1996. So we are in
swing and a miss.
We're in at this point that the date on the comics are like in September, so that would make it probably July that these are getting released. Yeah, because this was the summer of 1996. So yeah, this was this is getting, you know, they're probably reaching for something to stir the pot and get the fires going under this company. What we're heading to is probably just that. Another one of those things that it's like, like, hey, we need an event to spurn sales. And that's not a bad thing to do. But if Marvel is filing for bankruptcy here, I would assume that they're like, okay, this is our last ditch effort. We've got to do something that we have not really done a whole lot before, which I don't know. We'll talk about this on the fourth volume when we get to it. But let's just put a pin in that. I want to try and remember to bring it up. Did Marvel do anything like Heroes Reborn before this? We'll talk about that here in Volume 4. Final thoughts, Chris Armstrong, on Volume 3 of the X-Men Complete Onslaught Epic.
There was some pretty good stuff in here. Overall, I gotta say, probably my least favorite of the volume so far. The X-Men issues were a big highlight. They were really good. I liked the Avengers issue a lot, but outside of that, a lot of passable stuff, in my opinion.
Evan, what's your final thoughts?
I thought the X-Men stuff, I mean, it started off really strong. X-Men 55, Uncanny 336, into Cable 35. And then, like I said, you got to keep in mind, these weren't written as a linear story, necessarily. So, I think you rearrange them a little. To me, when big crossovers like this work, you're not required to buy every book. And the tie-ins that aren't essential to the main story ought to give you that feeling of a shared universe, do something for the characters in their own book and tie into the story. And some of these do that, some of them don't. But you do lose a lot of the momentum in the complete epic with some of these. But overall, I mean, I'm still having fun going through these, reading over them again. Looking forward to seeing if Volume 4, and specifically Onslaught Marvel Universe, is as freaking awesome as I remember it being.
Oh, man. It's going to get so, so good. I can't wait to talk about Volume 4.
I wish Pillow Fight is spectacular.
I like the idea of, like, I wish they had done, like, a main trade of the main drag of this story, and then, you know, done, like, the side trades, you know, like they did with Wars. I think that would have been a better way to handle this.
All right, well, yeah, I look forward to talking Volume 4. Volume 3, I mean, it was okay. There were some parts there. I think it held, to me, it was better than Volume 2. That's my opinion.
But. Jesse, had you ever read this before? Like, when you, last, 20 years ago, when you approached me about dedicating an entire month to Onslaught, and I said, okay, well, in 2019, we'll have it, you know, we'll have room on the calendar, on the schedule. Was it because you hadn't read it and it was something that was on your mind, you knew it was going to take a month to do, or you had read it before and you're like, oh, this is something worth tumbling about? I mean, what was your mentality going into this?
Yeah, I read this before. I think, if I remember right, our conversation, we were trying to figure out, like, something to do. You wanted to do Marvel Event May, if I remember right. It was something along those lines. And I was like, dude, we need to talk about Onslaught. Then we got to looking at, you know, how many Onslaught trades there were, and how many pages we'd have to read. And we decided to throw it into September and make it a whole month thing. But yes, this, in my opinion, is, at the time when I was reading this, this was an event that I thought would never be beaten. And I honestly think Civil War probably comes close to it. There are some pretty good ones after this, like House of
Vengeance. Hold on. Civil War is 100% a better story than
Civil War probably beats this.
But imagine reading Civil War with all the tie-ins of varying intensity mixed in with those main seven issues.
And what you get
I hear what you're saying. I'm taking the main drag of Onslaught and putting it up against the main drag of Civil War. I think Civil War has a lot more gravitas to it. There are societal issues. If you're not into politics in your comics, okay, maybe Civil War doesn't do it for you. But this is a personal thing for me, because I'm going to make an argument for Civil War being one of the best comic book stories, and you'd be like, nah, it doesn't really do anything for me, which I accept that. But
I love Civil War.
Mm-hmm. I go ahead.
I guess Onslaught is more, maybe it has that gravitas for the people who were reading it at the time and saw all these stories being built up. I mean, like we said, Cable versus Apocalypse, that had been building even before we knew who Cable was.
Resolution of the X-Traitor, that had been a long time running.
Civil War definitely has appeal beyond, I guess, it stands alone better. I mean, I'm not going to say you're wrong for liking Civil War better, even though I kind of just did. But that's not what I meant. I think they're kind of two different animals. I mean, Onslaught definitely rewards the longtime reader.
Yeah.
And Civil War, I mean, it helps, but I don't think you have to be a longtime reader to appreciate the story for Civil War. Whereas Onslaught, I mean, you can find cool stuff in it, but you know, like me and Jesse and Chris, we were reading this stuff and this paid off all kinds of things for us.
If I'm at work and the girls who don't watch TV or read comic books or go to the movies say to me, give me a comic to read that I might enjoy, I would never hand them Onslaught.
No, okay.
Even just the main drag. I would hand them, if I had a choice between the two, I would hand them Civil War. Because Civil War transcends the comic story, and talks about, to a degree, real issues. There's a lot of stuff going on in Civil War that speaks to people who don't read comics. You really said it best. Onslaught is one of those storylines that is very much a comic book story for the longtime comic book reader. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the story isn't necessarily as grabbing me like it's grabbing you guys, because you guys are like right in the thick of it. So it's kind of like your WrestleMania after having watched a year of Raws. But if you haven't watched Raw for an entire year and you sit down and watch WrestleMania, you're like, who are these guys? What's this? I don't understand. Why is there a girl wrestling at the main event? Why is this on at 1 o'clock in the morning? It started at 4 in the afternoon.
But you know, the funny thing is, it seems like a lot of the debate with comics these days is that it has to be either or. It has to be Civil War that can appeal to everybody, or you know, it has to be something that's so dense and honoring the history, when you can have both. You can have all kinds of different comics, and you know, people still think comics have to be one thing. It has to be grim and gritty. It has to be deadly serious. It has to be all ages. You know, it has to be funny only. No, you know, can't be too violent. Has to honor 70 years of continuity, and if you step out of line, how dare you? Or has to be completely accessible to a new reader, and if we get into double digits, it's time to reboot. And when in fact, comics can be all those things.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely in no way suggesting that there shouldn't be an Onslaught, and there should only be a Civil War, because that would be death to comics. Just to kind of talk about the DC side of it, I think you can have like your Dark Side War for those people who like shitty comics, and you can also have your Kingdom Comes, you know, which is a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Kingdom Come can stand alone, whereas Dark Side War, it's not as, you know, deep dive intensive as Onslaught, but yeah, that one paid off several years of reading, whereas you can dust off Kingdom Come and read it any time. And I mean, heck, you don't even have to read Kingdom Come, you can just look at Kingdom Come and be entertained.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you if you just looked at the pictures, it's still one of the best looking comics ever.
I wanted to say one of the
right up there with the Max.
Sam Keith, baby, we love you. When you look at Onslaught, and you guys kind of already touched on this, but you look at Onslaught was the culmination of a lot of stuff, and it was kind of like the end game of what a lot of things built to. And it really is for the Marvel Universe. When we get through Volume 4, Mark, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But when you look at Civil War, in my opinion, Civil War was actually the catalyst for a lot of great story afterwards. It, in a sense, Seven issues. So that, you know, that's a great story to tell. But I can remember that event affecting the Marvel Universe for a long time afterwards. This right here is kind of like, you know, the opposite of that. This was the Marvel Universe affecting all this stuff leading up to Onslaught. Civil War was a great catalyst for some storytelling afterwards. It affected the Marvel Universe for a long time. Steve Rogers was dead. All that stuff was going on. So, and this does too, in a sense, but I can tell you that it is definitely what happens after Onslaught, in my opinion, is not as popular as what happened after Civil War. So, and that might just be because I kind of dropped out of reading some Marvel comics at that point in time. I don't know. But anyway, it's a good question, Mark. I mean, if you're looking at it comparing the two, I think they learned a lot from this event to tell 10 years later the event of Civil War. They probably said, okay, we need to kind of, I don't know, tighten things up a little bit. You know, just make it a little little bit tighter. They did a great job with Civil War. So, you know, you're comparing something that happened close to 10 years before. Anyway, yeah, I'm excited. Volume 4 is going to be a lot of fun. We have all sorts of fun things. I enjoyed this volume. I think Volume 3 is better than Volume 2. But yeah, you know, this was my event, Mark. That's why I picked it. I don't know if I answered that yet or not, but this was the event, in my opinion, that I was reading at the time that it happened, and I felt that it had the biggest impact on the Marvel Universe with the onslaught. You know, you look at Civil War, comparing the two again, Civil War were the heroes fighting amongst each other. This was one big bad, one big swerve. The one guy that we thought had the most honorable motives, Professor Xavier, Professor X, and now we have this being that just is massive and is able to, you know, level city blocks and is presenting this huge challenge to all of our heroes in the Marvel U.
So I'm going to do one more comparison.
Do it.
Now that I think about it. When I think about, like, what Onslaught's motives are and what he's trying to accomplish, the hurdles he's trying to get over in order to get to his ultimate goal, and what the heroes and how ineffectual they're being in stopping Onslaught. You know what this really is? It's the 90s version of the Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay. I think the Infinity Gauntlet happened in the 90s. Very early 90s, but that's all right.
The mid-90s version of the Infinity.
Okay, yes. The mid to late 90s version of the early 90s version of the Infinity. Why did I think the Infinity Gauntlet was in the 80s?
I'll let that one pass. I can understand.
But that's what this feels like. It actually makes sense then that they were so close together in time, because when I really think about the beats and the motivations, if you think about, like, Onslaught's, like, collecting, you know, various powerful human beings and putting them on a glove and he's shaking it. No,
it was. That's not a bad allegory there.
I'm wondering actually how much of their success with the Infinity Gauntlet informed the structure of the storytelling of this event.
I'm sure it did. I mean, we are starting to get in the mid 90s. We're starting to get into the big event flow of things, where we're just like, okay, we've got to have another event. Did you see how much sales went up on that event? Okay, let's do another one. And then it just continues to grow out of control.
Did we see how bad Acts of Vengeance was?
What? Love Acts of Vengeance.
Didn't Acts of Vengeance, though, do very poorly?
Well, it wasn't. I don't think it ever had, like, a special of its own. The funny thing was, like, I never read any of the core Acts of Vengeance stuff. I just, I forget what age I was pretty young, and I stumbled upon the first issue of the Acts of Vengeance story, which was, I want to say, Avengers Spotlight 26. And so then anything that had Acts of Vengeance on it, I was like, oh, I got to get that. I found out secondhand that Loki was behind it all, because the coolest part of Acts of Vengeance for me was when Spider-Man had cosmic powers.
Ooh, I think I own like two issues that have Acts of Vengeance up there in the top corner. This was something that was just affecting all of the titles. They didn't have like obviously an Acts of Vengeance standalone. This was just, you know, up there in the top corner. And what was the deal? Like, well, heroes were facing off with villains that they normally didn't face off with, or something.
Basically, yes. The idea was the villains got together and switched up opponents, and there was an overall story that Loki was behind it all. But I mean, I wasn't reading much of Avengers stuff then. And I just remember I saw Acts of Vengeance and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Cause I was reading Grey Hulk back then. And so you had Cosmic Spider-Man fighting Grey Hulk with Todd McFarlane.
Todd McFarlane art. Yep. I know what you're talking about there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Cosmic Spidey stuff, I just loved. Acts of Vengeance, like I said, it took me a while to even realize there was that much of an overall storyline to it.
I started to really start collecting. Like, my comic book collecting starts off with me just going to the local 7-Eleven, buying a Slurpee and a comic, and it was sort of like whatever had a cool cover. I wasn't collecting things linearly.
Sure. Right.
And then as I got a little bit older and I could ride further on my bike and I can get to the comic book store, I became like obsessive with comics. And that's about the time Acts of Vengeance starts. So I got a lot of different Acts of Vengeance comics at that time. But yeah, I don't think there was like a main title, like Acts of Vengeance title, like there was with Civil War.
I think the main storyline ran in Avengers. But I mean, that one, to me, I always thought that was a cool concept, because it was just basic, very simple. Have the heroes fight new villains. They're actually doing a callback to it with some annuals this year called Acts of Evil.
Oh, really?
It's like a Punisher fighting the Brood Queen, She-Hulk versus Bullseye. Seems kind of one-sided.
How does that work?
I don't know. Moon Knight taking on Kang.
Okay.
So, I've been kind of curious about those. But, it's just a very, very simple concept. And then I still don't know what the whole thing behind it was.
The amount of Acts of Vengeance issues are pretty staggering. I mean, did it touch on every single title?
I think so.
They have at least 60 issues here.
Yeah. I'm like 2 issues away from finishing collecting Alpha Flight Volume 1, and I keep thinking Acts of Vengeance, just buying everything with that little Acts of Vengeance flag that I find in dollar bins. I'm a cheapskate when it comes to comics. I'm like, oh, that was kind of an important issue, $5? Nah, I can do without it.
Well, I did not mean to offend you in any way. I was under the assumption that Acts of Vengeance was not a well thought of event or an event that really drove a lot of comic books.
I should point out that my fondness of it is based solely on, you know, the prism of 9 or 10 or however old it was Evan's eyes. I did not assess it critically.
The old what do they call them? Nostalgia goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, let's get into plugs here. Chris had to step away, so I want to go ahead just real quick, give a shout out to Chris. Usually we have him shout out his Twitter, which I believe is BrodyMan34. I just want to double check here real quick.
Well, Brody, I'm sorry. Man, I just happened to check out the Unspoken Decades Facebook page. They put up an Acts of Vengeance Wolverine.
Did they really?
Yes.
Ooh, who'd Wolverine take on?
Is this the one with Psylocke on the front where he's like laying in her arms?
No, this what? Is...
That's an X-Men.
There's a guy with some sort of shark fin on his head.
Oh, tiger shark.
That's right.
Actually, grabbing some gal.
Dollar bin the other day.
Yep. All right, BrodyMan34, at BrodyMan34. So you can follow Chris Armstrong on Twitter. Hey, he does a lot of things with the Unspoken Decade as well as I do. We have a couple articles over there. Go to theunspokendecade.com. Probably just search up Chris's name or any articles on there. If you're a fan of 90s comics, check it out. Chris and I also do a podcast right here on the Rattalichin Broadcasting Network called Unspoken Issues. We just recently talked about Spider-Man and Batman. Yes, that's right. One 1990s intercompany crossover. Intra. No. Cross. Yeah. DC and Marvel.
So when's the Death of Warlock dropping?
And we haven't set a date to record. We're probably going... We got one other poll that's up right now, so I think we're going to do a double recording. Death of Warlock, which, by the way, the Death of Starman had a one-vote lead with, like, a day left, and then Chris is like, puts out a plea for help to everybody on Facebook and says, I need to talk about Rob Liefeld, and I need to talk about the New Mutant. And then shortly after that, the Death of Warlock wins by, like, 7 votes. Like, son of a bitch.
That's but anyway, hilarious.
Yeah. And then let's see. We have a poll up right now. Is it on there, Mark? Are you still on the Unspoken Decade?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, well, I should have known better.
I am, because I just realized who else is on that cover besides Tiger Shark.
Who is it?
La Bandera.
Okay.
The mutant with the power of leadership.
Nice. That's not as good as the power of taking credit for things you didn't do, but it's close.
That one is awesome. I remember that guy. La Bandera, I've read exactly one comic with her in it, and she didn't do anything, but I learned about her from the TSR Marvel role-playing game X-Men source book.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, it's Wildcats number 3, which apparently has a guest appearance. We're doing guest appearances. That's the theme. Wildcats number 3 has a guest appearance of Youngblood, which I don't think I've read. And then we have Shadowhawk number 4, which is Shadowhawk, and on the front cover has Savage Dragon, who has him by the throat and looks like he's about to pound his face in. And right now, Wildcats is leading 67 votes right now. Wildcats is leading 43-24. It's going to be another runaway hit.
I voted for Wildcats because I had that issue for years, and I don't think I ever read it.
Okay, we'll read it for you. Anyway, yeah, you can check out Chris Armstrong over there on the UnspokenDecade.com and hanging out with me on Unspoken Issues right here on the Rattalichin Broadcasting Network. All right, Evan Bevins, hit us with some plugs, man.
Let's see. I've got a support group, the webcomic about a support group for people with lame superpowers, in case your origin doesn't go the way they show it in the comics. I am working on a piece for Graffiti about who could replace Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm pretty sure I did these plugs last time. This is what I get for coming on consecutive podcasts. I gotta come up with something else to plug. Let's see. And then probably going to be writing about Deathstroke and his dysfunctional family with Titans Season 2 dropping. That'll be on newsandsentinel.com.
Very good. Mark Radulich, schedule, sir.
Okay. So tomorrow we've got a double shot of shows. We've got a TV party for the Dark Crystal in the afternoon, the Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. Myself and Robert Winfrey will be talking about that. And then me and the boys, I don't know which boys, but the boys will be reviewing Clash of the Champions. This will not be a like 3-show, 9-hour review like we've done previously. It's just Clash of the Champions. Because I don't think I'm going to have time to also watch the Lucha show that's also at the same time as Clash of the Champions, AAA. Anyway, doesn't matter. Wednesday, Tarja in the Raw, Jesse. And then on Thursday, myself and Sean Comer will be putting the Dark Crystal from the 80s on trial. That Saturday, the 21st, myself, Victor Cucato, and maybe possibly could be Robert Winfrey will be doing boxing coverage. We've got Andrew Shelby versus Jay Harris. You can go in the archives and check out myself and Pat Mullen talking Bloodsport 2. We'll be doing a watch along for that. Onslaught Volume 2 in the archives now. It Chapter 2, we have a review of that. Killswitch Engage Atonement, She-Ra Season 3. And myself and Robert Winfrey did boxing coverage. Devin Haney versus Zaur
Abdullah Mangala.
Abdullah Oblongata.
There we go.
That's his name. It's only minorly offensive.
Hakuna Matata.
Yes. So we did boxing coverage of that, and I messed up his name just as many times then as I am now. All right. So go ahead and check out all those shows in the archive right here on the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network. And stay tuned. I was on the Polynics, not politics, Polynics podcast. We talked about the basic income guarantee and Andrew Yang and mental illness. And we talked about Elizabeth Warren and how do you get young people to vote. And I suggested make it a part of having to download a patch for Overwatch. Nothing.
I read that tweet and I was like, Mark don't play video games. Does Sean have his password?
Yeah, Sean hacked my Twitter. I pay attention to stuff. But yeah, so we talked about like how to get voter turnout, you know, to increase and things like that. So I don't talk politics very much because people are dumb and I hate it. But this guy, he brought me onto his show. He was very nice, and we talked for about 90 minutes. I don't know how much of it actually will end up in his show. If you want to hear one of the rare occurrences of me actually talking politics instead of sort of a sidebar on a movie or TV or comic podcast or, you know, the typical heavy metal show podcast that Jesse and I do, check out the Polynics podcast on anywhere that you find podcasts, including this one.
All right.
And for God's sakes, Podcoin people.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know where you're listening to podcasts these days, but if you're not listening on podcasts, you are throwing money away good after bad.
Podcoin, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, check it out. I will throw in Mark's well-produced ad, if I may say so myself.
Thank you.
Yes, very good. All right, well, hey, yeah, the old cam plugs are going in here at the end. Until Onslaught Volume 4, the finale's coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Be ready, because things are about to shake up, and it's going to get good. Trust you me. That's Mark. That's Evan. Chris has already taken off. I'm Jesse Starcher. Have a great one. We'll see you next week.
I didn't mention Squirrel Girl.
Hey, everybody. I really do hope you love the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network. Did you know that you can actually get paid just for listening to this podcast? I know it sounds insane, but it's true. We just discovered this free new app called Podcoin, and it literally pays you to listen to podcasts. Here's how it works. You listen to podcasts and you earn Podcoin while you listen. Then you turn that Podcoin in for gift cards at places like Amazon or Starbucks, or if you're a good person, you could even donate that Podcoin to charity. The more you listen, the more you earn. So here's what you do. Download the app right now on iPhone or Android, and I have a special code for you. Simply use our code MARKWED5, that's capital M-A-R-K-W-E-D 5. Capital M-A-R-K-W-E-D 5, MARKWED5. And you'll get 300 Podcoin just for signing up. And if you listen to enough of us on there, you can get a cappuccino at Starbucks or an Amazon gift card on us. So go ahead and go listen to this podcast or virtually any podcast on Podcoin and sign up with code MARKWED5. I swear it'll change the way you listen to podcasts.
Thank you all for joining us. Make sure to give that Rattlitch in Broadcasting Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts we have to offer. We are at home on Spreaker, but you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and recently we have hit the air on Spotify. Find your favorite podcast platform and type in RADULICH to subscribe for some great content. If you enjoyed this show, please feel free to share and spread the word. And as always, we appreciate any feedback and look forward to entertaining you again soon.
Arr, Jesse Starcher, I fancy you.
Oh,
I'm ready to talk. Someone needs to stop eating chips.
If I'm not mistaken, Toy Biz was the company that Marvel created, spun off, and then bought Marvel because Marvel was in that bad of financial shape.
90s were a wacky time.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Come on, baby,
8,
say you
9,
love me 5, 6, 7 times.
This is where we have iron nipples. Iron Man has nipples on the Iron Man suit.
Some of Onslaught's reality manipulating powers. I think there's an issue where he absorbs Joel Schumacher.
You know, you're never fully dressed without your nipples.
Honey, you got your keys, you got your wallet, you got your nipples? Yes, ready to go.
Do we really want me to ramble for another 10 minutes and...
And that's nothing to sneeze at.
Did you give us your answer, Chris? Are you there, sir? Am I there?
He must have gone off to really think about this.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. All right, what'd you say?
I've got
volume 3. Yep, lost you again, brother.
Must be that psionic interference.
Rock away beach. Rock away beach. I've lost connection like 5 times in the last 10 minutes.
There it is.
Am I back?
The fuck, is he banging on a drum?
I'll be using that word for a while.
Okay, but just a warning, Jesse, when you use that word, you sound like a boob.
The trail of tears was shorter than the road to Onslaught.
All right, Chris, before you lose connection again, volume 2 or volume 3? Oh, damn.
End this fucking show already.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.125%. APR, 4.22%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. 8.88% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
With Dunkin' Go-To's, you can get a great deal on two of your favorites, like 2 egg and cheese wraps for $2, 2 bagels with cream cheese spread for $4, and 2 bacon, egg, and cheese croissants for $5. In my opinion, it's a deal that's pretty tough to beat. That's just if you want my go-to cents. If you don't want my go-to cents, it's go too late. Dunkin' Go-To's. A great deal for $2, $4, or $5. America runs on Dunkin'. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Exclusions apply.